immediately.
Te
of you. Darshaye, I shall show. Phalam, the result. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Ambarish, you have invited me to eat as a guest, but instead of feeding me, you yourself have eaten first. Because of your misbehavior, I shall show you something to punish you. Responsibly, Maharaj Ambarish, you have invited me to eat as a guest, but instead of feeding me, you yourself have eaten first. Because of your misbehavior, I shall show you something to punish you. Purport. A devotee cannot be defeated by a so-called mystic yogi. This will be proved by the failure of Durvasa Muni's endeavor to chastise Maharaj Ambarish. Harav Abhaktasya Kuto Mahad Guna. Bhagavatam 5.18.12. One who is not a pure devotee of the Supreme Lord has no good qualifications, however great a mystic, philosopher, or fruitive worker he may be. Only a devotee emerges victorious in all circumstances, as will be shown in this incident involving the rivalry between Durvasa and Maharaj Ambarish. Translation again. Maharaj Ambarish, you have invited me to eat as a guest, but instead of feeding me, you yourself have eaten first. Because of your misbehavior, I shall show you something to punish you. So we're continuing in the story of Maharaj Ambarish, who was the king of the world and would perform so many pious activities, and at this time had performed vows for following Ekadasi for a year, Ekadasi and Dwadasi. It's not described exactly how strictly he followed those vows, but it's what I understand is it was a serious vow that he was completing, and just at the point that he was about to complete, and he did so many things, feeding the brahmanas and, you know, the cows, taking care of the cows. I mean, just, he did so many things, and now he's about to break his fast when Durvasa Muni shows up. So he made the decision that because the time to break the fast had come, that he would drink water to break the fast, but simultaneously not breaking the fast. And Durvasa Muni is now feeling, he's expressing that he's feeling insulted. So he's saying, you've invited me, and a guest, in the Vedic culture, the guest should always be served food or prasadam first. And in this case, by his mystic yogi powers, he found out, he realized that Ambarish Maharaj had drank water, so now he's acting like he had actually eaten first, even though he'd only just drank some water. So he's saying, you yourself have eaten first. So he's not accepting that the drinking water was, you know, an in-between, you know, eating and not eating. He took it as he's eating, and he's insulted. And then he's threatening him that now I'm going to punish you. And then, of course, he will attempt to do that. And then in the purport, Srila Prabhupada, first point is he's making is that a devotee cannot be defeated by a so-called mystic yogi, and that this will be proved by the fact that this demon that Durvasa Muni sends or creates to kill Maharaj Ambarish, he can't achieve that. And then Srila Prabhupada quotes from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, and the whole verse that he's quoting is, it goes like this, yes, yasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana saver gunais tatra sama sate shara harav abhaktasya kuto mahat guna mano ratena satita vato bahi. And the translation is, all the demigods and their exalted qualities such as religion, knowledge, and renunciation, become manifest in the body of one who has developed unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. On the other hand, a person devoid of devotional service and engaged in material activities has no good qualities. Even if he is adept at the practice of mystic yoga or the honest endeavor of maintaining his family and relatives, he must be driven by his own mental speculations and must engage in the service of the Lord's external energy. How can there be any good qualities in such a man? So, Srila Prabhupada's purport, he goes into explaining, among other things, the 26 qualities of a Vaishnav. I can't remember what year this was published, but Sasrup Maharaj wrote a whole book called The 26 Qualities of a Devotee. It goes into detail on each quality. And what I understand about these qualities is that even though people in the material world, people who are not what we call non-devotees or karmis, they may have some of these good qualities, but it's like because they don't have Krishna, all of their qualities are like zeros. When you add Krishna, like he's like the one before the zeros, then that becomes a significant number. So I would have to admit that years ago I was definitely in the mind frame of that only devotees had good qualities and the non-devotees had no good qualities. And sometimes I've heard classes or it's seemingly that non-devotees are put down as, you know, not as valuable or not as, I don't know what to say, their qualities added up to nothing. And what I now understand, you say in my old age or whatever, that if we have that kind of attitude towards non-devotees, then why would we want to preach to them and help them? And also to understand that we were once like them. You know, we were in the material world and had no concept of Krishna. So like the idea of us being superior to non-devotees is not helpful to ourselves or to them or to the preaching effort. But if we just see them as people who have good qualities, but they're blocked from achieving them, just like we are in so many ways. Like I'm going to go over the 26 qualities, and you'll see that some of them we may be able to look at ourselves and say, well, I have a little bit of that, or you know, maybe I'm working on that one. But some of these are just so directly connected to being a lover of Krishna, so that really only a pure devotee could really say, yes, I have some of that quality. So here's the list of the qualities. He is very kind to everyone. And consider that every word is important in these descriptions. Like maybe we're very kind, but are we kind to everyone? I mean, there's something to look at in our lives. He does not make anyone his enemy. So that's goes hand in hand with what I was saying. Being very kind to everyone does not make anyone his enemy. That's pretty all-inclusive. He is truthful. He is equal to everyone. No one can find any fault in him. He is magnanimous. He is mild. He is always clean. He is without possessions. He works for everyone's benefit. He is very peaceful. He is always surrendered to Krishna. Okay, here's one that's... So would anybody here say they are always surrendered to Krishna? No, something we need to work on, right? But we're on the path. But here, you know, that's a quality that you wouldn't find except in a devotee. So he has no material desires. He is very meek. He is steady. He controls his senses. He does not eat more than required. He is not influenced by the Lord's illusory energy. He offers respect to everyone. He does not desire any respect for himself. He is very grave. He is merciful. He is friendly. He is poetic, he is expert, and he is silent. So that's the 26 qualities. So I just wanted to go back to number 20, which was, he does not desire any respect for himself. Because in this verse, we can see that Durvasa Muni was definitely expecting respect. And the fact that Maharaj Ambarish had drank some water, completely threw him in a tailspin to, get angry. And I was thinking about that, at that moment that Durvasa Muni got angry. I mean, I know it's a pastime and, you know, it is what it is. But what if he actually had been able to control his senses to the point where he wasn't feeling insulted? Like, he just let it go. Like, he saw what happened, and he just let it go. He didn't, what if he had just not gotten insulted? He would have saved him so much aggravation. I mean, he ends up, in order to rectify the situation, he had to run all over the universe. He had to just do so many things that were pretty inconvenient for him, and took him some time and everything. And it all could have been avoided if he had just been able to, at that moment, not let his anger get the best of him. And so, to me, this is one of the lessons in this verse. Like, if he had been aware of, like, what his goal in life was, like, as a mystic yogi, he must have had some goal. Maybe it's not the same goal as a devotee. Maybe he wanted to perfect his life as a mystic yogi. Maybe his idea was to attain Vishnu, Does anybody know what a mystic yogi's goals in life are? He was a Shivite, so he wanted to connect with Shiva. He wanted to have a relationship with Shiva. He was a partial incarnation? Okay. Okay, that's why someone was describing him as being Ashutosh, being easily satisfied and easily angered. So, I mean, it's just pretty clear that people don't usually look for opportunities to run around the universe and, you know, be chased. And ultimately, he had to apologize to Ambarish. So it's just a lesson that if we're looking to achieve our goals, that sometimes we may let things go for the greater purpose. Like, in our case, as devotees of Krishna, I'm sure that we have common goals of wanting to be Krishna conscious ourselves, wanting to inspire others to be Krishna conscious, and the larger picture of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the planet. Because this is Srila Prabhupada's mission, and we're his instruments, we're his followers. So if we're keeping that in mind in our daily activities, in our life, as things happen, then sometimes we may discover, I mean, I just know this in my own life, that sometimes what I'm doing doesn't really lead me to the goal. And it does take sometimes this concept of letting things go. And that's not always easy, because like in the case of anger, if we are submissive to that emotion, it can really get us in trouble. And it takes control to catch ourselves at the moment it's happening. And I'm not saying I know how to do it, I'm just saying that it would be a good thing to learn how to do. I mean, I can suggest that noticing when we do it is a step. And being able to recognize that takes, like, being a very, like we say, being present in the here and now, and not being reactive to things that are happening, but, you know, being so peaceful and just observant of what's going on, that we can actually, sometimes we can catch ourselves from going that route of being angry. Because certain emotions like anger can be destructive. And especially when relationships, like building a community, which we have a large community here in Alachua, and we can see that the value of having a community where everyone is feeling connected, we can achieve so many wonderful things. Like, I think we all experienced that during the installation of Shri Shri Krishna Balaram a month or so ago. It was a wonderful festival, and we all were so engaged in Krishna conscious activities and in taking care of the many guests who were here. And we saw our community really stepping up to being, you know, the kind of place we're proud of, that we're happy to be part of this community. And I think that on an ongoing basis, that we could make, you know, ongoingly our goal to develop our community in such a way that people are attracted to come here. And when they do come here, that they be taken care of very nicely. That's another aspect of, you know, being a community that is dedicated to spreading Krishna consciousness. So, let me just look back at the purport where Srila Prabhupada is, he's saying that a devotee emerges victorious in all circumstances. So, Srila Prabhupada is, in this verse and in so many verses in the Bhagavatam, encouraging us to take up Krishna consciousness in a wonderful way, and, you know, that our lives become purified so that we become happy. You know, he had that catchphrase, chant and be happy. I know when I first became a devotee, I thought I'd test that one out, and sure enough, it worked. So it gave me impetus to keep going. You know, like when I first joined, I was like, I'll try this for a week. And then after a week, well, I did find I was happier, and then I took on another week and another week. And after a while, you know, I accepted I was going to stay. But this process works. It really works. And if we want to look at our lives and see, is it true that if we chant, we become happy? Then, you know, all we have to do is look back on our life before. When I was researching these 26 qualities of a devotee, I was reading the preface? The first chapter. The first chapter and the 26 qualities of a devotee. And in this book, Satsrup Maharaj is making a very nice point about preaching in connection with good qualities. And he says, between preaching and behavior, there exists a dynamic tension. This is expressed in Sanatan Goswami's praise of Haridas Thakur. He doesn't say where he's quoting this from, but Sanatan Goswami wrote this. Some behave well, but do not preach the cult of Krishna consciousness, whereas others preach, but do not behave properly. So does everybody get that? That some people are preaching well, but they don't behave well. Other people are behaving well, but they don't preach. So he says, he's glorifying Haridas Thakur, and he's saying, you simultaneously perform both duties in relation to the holy name by your personal behavior and your preaching. Therefore, you are the spiritual master of the entire world, for you are the most advanced devotee in the world. And then Satsrup Maharaj writes, Srila Prabhupada confirms that his own followers also must preach and behave in an exemplary way. So he quotes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita Anti Leela. The qualifications expressed in this connection are that one must act accordingly to the scriptural injunctions and at the same time preach. The members of the Christian consciousness movement chant a minimum of 16 rounds a day, which can be done without difficulty. And at the same time, they must preach the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu according to the gospel of Bhagavad Gita as it is. One who does so is quite fit to become a spiritual master for the entire world. So, Prabhupada is using pretty strong language. We must preach. And I was reading further on in this chapter, he's again quoting Srila Prabhupada and just really driving the point home that a devotee must preach. The devotees of Lord, this is also from Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila. The devotees of Lord Chaitanya must preach Krishna consciousness in every village and town in the world. That will satisfy the Lord. It is not that one should act whimsically for his own personal satisfaction. This order comes down through the parampara system, and the spiritual master presents these orders for the disciple so that he can spread the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is the duty of every disciple to carry out the order of the bona fide spiritual master and spread Lord Chaitanya's message all over the world. So I hear this as pretty strong language that Srila Prabhupada is not going to be satisfied if we just become pure devotees ourselves. I mean, there's not saying he won't have some level of satisfaction, but the real message is that we must be concerned about others. It's just not going to cut it if we just become Krishna conscious ourselves. He's like saying words like must and always. I mean, these are like very strong words. We must preach. So I just keep on coming across this conclusion that a community of so many intelligent and advanced devotees, it just seems that we as a community should be coming together and having conversations, maybe as to ghosties, about, you know, how can we increase our preaching? How can we spread Krishna consciousness in this, quote, remote corner of the world, as Prabhupada called Gainesville? And we're even more remote than Gainesville, so this very remote corner of the world. This is our Prabhudatta Desh. This is, you know, our preaching field. And there's just so many ways we can spread Krishna consciousness. It's really up to us to come up with, you know, different methods. And things that worked so many years ago may need to be adjusted for this day and age. For instance, we didn't have the internet back in the early days, and now we do. So we can, you know, not that we're not using this resource, but I'm just saying that there's ways we can develop new methods of reaching people, and, you know, how can we participate? Because as a Grihastha community, we all are pretty much independent. We're not dependent on the temple. We earn our own way. We get to say what service we're going to do, and, you know, to some extent when we're going to do it, that kind of thing. So sometimes devotees are just waiting. I just know for myself, I'm just waiting to be engaged in Krishna service. Like, what are the opportunities? So if we can come up with programs that engage devotees in a way that we want to be engaged. So, because sometimes I've heard the managers say things like, oh, nobody wants to do anything. And that's kind of a disempowering kind of mentality, because, you know, as human, in this human form, we're always doing. We're always busy. There's no question of not doing. It's just a question of, are we inspired to participate in a particular activity? And generally, as independent householders, it's going to be something that we're attracted to do. Then we're going to be enthusiastic to do it. So if we can think of and create projects or... not that there's not already a lot of service, wonderful service, and maintaining the temple and taking care of the deities, and there's taking care of guests. There's so many things that are going on daily. And yet, when there's a project, like, for instance, again, the festival that we just experienced, there's like a barn-raising type enthusiasm, like, oh, that's all pitched together, and, you know, make this program happen. When there's that kind of connectedness amongst the devotees, then people just naturally want to help. You know, there's no question of, you know, trying to convince anyone. When we're enthusiastic, it's give me more. You know, we're looking for opportunities. So, anyway, these are some of my thoughts about how developing good qualities goes hand in hand with preaching. And I also want to just say something about integrity. This is, even though it's not on the list of the qualities of a Vaishnava, there's an interesting definition that that I've learned in some courses that I've taken, and that is that integrity, although it means the state of being whole and complete, just like sometimes if it's applied to a material thing like a bicycle, for instance, like if a spoke is missing out of a bicycle, then it actually could collapse, right? Because we say the integrity is lost. It's not strong anymore. You've lost a spoke, and therefore another spoke could break and the whole thing could collapse. Like if you're running a race, you know, a bicycle race, you want a bicycle that with all the spokes intact, strong, you know. Otherwise you're just, you know, not going to win the race. So integrity applied to us, to humans, and how we act, it also means being whole and complete. And in applying it to service, to work, our activities, things that we do, it can be defined as doing complete work, doing what you said you would do when you said you would do it, and communicating if it isn't going to happen. It actually can be summed up as being our word. Like if we say we're going to do something, that we're going to do it. And alongside of the definition is sort of a mantra. Without integrity, nothing works. So, you know, if we do see that if somebody says they're going to do something, then they're not going to do it, and they don't communicate, that workability then breaks down. And so in our daily lives, in our relationships to each other, this is a quality that I think is important, especially in management, just managing anything. I don't mean management like ISKCON management. I mean like just in management of activities or our lives, that if we can be responsible to do what we say we're going to do, when we give our word to something, that we actually do it. And if we take it in relation to our vows of initiation, our vows of marriage, I guess those are the ones that come to mind. Maybe there's other vows that we take. But I think those are the most important ones. If we can see what kind of havoc is created in our lives, not only our lives, people around us, if we break those vows. And so if we can start with those important ones and value the importance of, you know, I said I would do this. I said I would chant 16 rounds. I said I would follow the regular principles, you know, or if most of us are married or someday will be married, the youth, if we take it seriously, I'm taking these vows, and it's not that I'll take it for some time and in the future I'm going to break them. That's the havoc I'm talking about. That creates havoc. And especially in a community, Grihastha community, we can see that it's heartbreaking to see when couples break up. And basically what's happening is that they're not following their vows. Like the vows that they took to stay together and serve each other throughout their life. So whether it's initiation vows, marriage vows, or anything else that we're giving our word to, it's so important to be responsible to ourselves, and we can see that it does affect other people. And for our community, if one of the goals that we take on is that we want to develop this community, I don't know if you've taken on that. I see it like that, that we're all in this together, and we want to have a community that's exemplary. The people come here and they're like, wow, let me just join the Hare Krishna movement because I want to be like them. You know, what if we had a community like that? That would be valuable, right? So, you know, part of that is, you know, being true to ourselves, being true to our word, and then that means, you know, that in relation to others, things are going to go smoothly, that there is workability. Okay, I'm going to stop here, and thank you very much. Ask if there's any discussion or questions, corrections or anything. Sukada Prabhu.
I was remembering a class that Mahavishnu Maharaj had given quite a while ago. It was interesting because he was talking about preaching, but someone had asked a question, and of course this is just one angle, but basically he was saying, don't worry so much about preaching, just do everything right, do all the little things, everything. You'll see the deities, take Chanamrita, and then a natural outpouring of doing that is that you'll have so much love of God that it will naturally flow to others. So I thought that was interesting, that it's very true, you know, as we perform our sadhana. And then as far as our community goes, like there was a wonderful Harinam, you know, last weekend in Jacksonville, perfect opportunity for preaching, hundreds of people. And they were so attracted to the Harinam, you know, they were dancing, you know, so many young people, older people dancing with us and just coming up wanting to know, well, what is this? What are you doing? Because there they are lying under blanket in the sun, but it was so attractive. So that is a very dynamic way to spread Krishna consciousness, and very easy. It's there. All we have to do is go.
Thank you for sharing. Actually, I just was talking to a friend who lives in Gainesville. She's not a devotee, and she was telling me how she saw a Harinam. Maybe it was by the Hippodrome. It was downtown Gainesville. And it was, I said, they are youth? She said, well, they weren't so young. They were in their 30s. So I thought that it was our youth who go downtown. And what do you say? What? Oh, no, but I know that some of the ISKCON youth are going downtown. And she was just said it was so attractive. And this is a person who I never, I mean, she knows I'm a devotee, but she, you know, she's never expressed to me that she appreciated a Harinam. So yeah, any opportunity to go on Harinam. And of course, tonight is an opportunity. And there's a Tampa Rath Yatra coming up. So there's, yeah, so many opportunities. Who else had a question?
I just wanted to add to you made a comment about how Prabhupada didn't want us to just become pure devotees and not preach, but Prabhupada also says in the Nectar of Devotion, I believe, that one of the symptoms of an Uttama Adhikari, of a pure devotee, is that they're always thinking of ways to spread Lord Chaitanya's movement. And we can see that in Prabhupada's life, even like to his last breath, he was thinking of how to spread the movement. And I think that's really important, that it's like the both the means and the ways of becoming a pure devotee. And once you are the pure devotees, then all they can think about is how to spread the movement.
Yeah. Thank you. Turn the crown for them.
Hari Bhavad. So you were talking about preaching and ways of preaching. I know it's like in some countries, sometimes a few devotees will try to organize college preaching, TV preaching, you know, different means. And maybe if we can have that here too, maybe some devotees that are not so busy, you know, they have, you know, to have a little time, they could try, even a person like you. try to organize, like, you know, college preaching, and then you say, hey, Pushkar, can you make it on Tuesday, or Madan Mohan Wednesday, you know, like that. And little by little things would fit in place, and we could have some nice preaching, especially the colleges around.
It's true.
Even TV program, somehow it's a little difficult here, but I know, like Guyana and Trinidad, it's easy. Like my last visit to Guyana, the devotee said, look, we have a TV program for you tomorrow. I just arrived in the country, like that, you know. So, you know, things like that, and then you could reach to a large mass of people, so much, you know, and that's very effective. So we, you know, we need to think of different ways.
Yeah.
I'm so busy right now, really, in terms of work and stuff, it's difficult to try to get that time. But maybe I could fit in a little preaching now and then, you know, but if somebody could organize it, you know.
Yeah, because they say if you come up with an idea that you should be the one prepared to do it, you know. But this is a symptom of our day and age, that we're so busy, we just pack in so much that sometimes we forget that the important things. But those are two great ideas. College preaching, I mean, we have two colleges. University of Florida, Santa Fe College. I mean, these, you know, there's things going on, but there's so much more we can do. So much more. Like, yeah, why don't we do classroom preaching? What's stopping us from doing that? We used to do it all the time. We used to travel long distances to go to the colleges, and here we are, you know, it's right in our backyard. And also, by the way, as far as like TV, you know, I've been helping with the publicity with Rasalila, the two of us together, and we've both seen that we need like a PR, well, I guess you call it communications nowadays, but a communications department in this temple. We could be getting so many things, not just our big festivals, but even, you know, Sunday feast. I mean, every week we're having a festival. We could be advertising it in more ways than we're doing now. And it would take group of people, and I'm not saying I'm not willing to do it, but it's just other people as well. I'm not in town all the time. So if anybody's interested in forming a communications department, what we used to call PR, public relations, that would be nice. Anybody else? Madam Mahampala?
Earlier in your class, you were mentioning about being present, if he had his presence, and I was a couple of things that came to my mind was our sadhana is based on that verse, always remember Krishna. And then, of course, Lord Chaitanya, he has the favorite verse that I think it was Pushkar mentioned the other day when someone came into Prabhupada's pharmacy and filled a prescription. He says, but actually, what's the real prescription for prema? He quoted that verse, Chanadapis Nichina. So in that verse, it says, Kirtanya Sadahari. So it appears that that's the method to always be present, is to be chanting, and everything's included in your relationship with Krishna and his name. So that we can see Maharaj Ambarish, that he's always remembering Krishna. They never forget Krishna. It's a basis.
Yeah, thank you. Anyone else? Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.